The opinions expressed in the following program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.
Family-owned Palermo Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast, located at 901 Gazan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-531-8300.
Hello, everybody. This is Brian Jose. Welcome to another episode of the Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Podcast. Tonight's guest is going to be Tommy Tombstone from the YouTube channel Tommy Among the Tombstones. I have my co-host with me, Kim Colleen, and our new co-host, Tanya. You can say your last name because
I know you still haven't gotten it. Nobody can pronounce your name. Dyer Sager.
Okay, I'll get it. I should be able to get it next time, but I need to hear it a few times.
Yes, it's two German names.
Yeah.
Well, welcome, Tommy. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so like what Brandon was saying, I'm Tommy Tombstone. I have a YouTube account called Tommy Amongst the Tombstones. To narrow it down, I've been doing investigations, paranormal investigations, that is, since 2020. When I first started YouTube, I primarily did short films. I used to have an old YouTube account since 2009. So I did a lot of short films and stupid little shorts on there. And then I went through high school, took a digital media class, did a lot of video stuff with that. And then it wasn't until high school, like later on in high school, I kind of got back into it. And then it got like, okay, I'm going all over the place, but when 2020 hit and COVID hit, I was kind of, you know, stuck with what I was going to do for my YouTube channel. So I was like, generally the guys I do short films with all live in different states. So I was like, what am I going to do for content? So I've always been interested in, the paranormal stuff. So I decided to check out some cemeteries and do kind of like some vloggy type videos. Mm-hmm. So I did about like two or three that spring, and it kind of died out, and I went back into the short film stuff. So it wasn't until 2021, the summer of 2021, I believe it was like the day before the 4th of July, because I specifically remember this, we did a cemetery, Munchkin Land, here in Michigan. So I started off there, didn't have any gear. And then it kind of just progressed over time, going to different cemeteries where I got more involved with it and, you know, invested into some gear. And then I met Drew from Living Histories Mysteries, did a couple collaboration videos with him. And then like, it just, from here on then, it was like, boom, I fell in love with it. So that's kind of like where I'm at now. And, but yeah, also, if I didn't mention, I am a part of the Midwest Parahistoric Society, which Drew is in, and we've done some really cool investigations since the fall of last year.
Yeah, I was about to say, just watched the one where you were at the Olympia Books.
Yeah, that was two investigations ago. I haven't released my video from the most recent one, but yeah, that was a very interesting investigation.
Yeah, I noticed the one, the item on the lamp. That was crazy, where the little toy hanging
down. Oh, yeah. It was
all those SLS figures everywhere.
Yeah, so what that was like a little toy airplane thing hanging from a spring all the way, I believe it was on this all the way up to the ceiling, or if it was from like a lamp. And I just remember, because we were doing some interviews, and I hear one of the people from our group, her name was Heather, was like freaking out. And she's like, you guys got to come look at this. And sure enough, we came over there and this thing was like bouncing up and down. And there was no airflow. Because I remember I went over there and, you know, tried to debunk it. And I was like, well, maybe it's some airflow or so. Like someone would literally have to grab this thing for it to like slightly move like this. And like you said, that's when Randy from our group pulled out his SLS off his iPad and started popping up with like little figures and stuff. So I, you know, overall I can't really debunk it. It was a very odd scenario. But yeah, that was a very interesting investigation nonetheless.
Yeah, when I was watching it, I was like, normally with something on a string, if there's an air current, it's not going to just it looked like it was swinging, like it was going in circles at first, and then when you pulled it, it just seemed like it kept bouncing and wouldn't stop. That was the weirdest evidence I've seen in a while.
Yeah, and because you would think if it was airflow, it'd be like rocking back and forth, but it was uh-huh. almost just going like up and down, like literally something pulled it. So that's where I was like a little bit confused as to like how that could even happen.
Yeah, I thought that was like some of the most compelling stuff that, I mean, I'm in a paranormal group. We're all in a paranormal group. So we've seen some compelling evidence of ourselves, but normally to capture as long as that went on film, it doesn't usually happen like that.
No.
That's really cool.
That was definitely one of my most favorite experiences from that investigation. That same investigation, we also, alongside with Drew, it was like in the middle of the bookstore. So I was with two other people, like real close by, but my cameraman, Joe, was filming Drew, and Drew caught some like grade A, like EVPs that blew me away. I'm sure if you watched the video, you probably heard those, where he was literally had a specific book. And he was like, basically asking the spirits, can you name the title of this book? And sure enough, the first book, like you can see it, he's pointing to it. And it was the title of the book was Russia, and clear as day, you can hear it say Russia. And then literally right after that, he grabbed another book, and this one was more like a little more difficult for the spirits, I'm guessing, to answer, because it wasn't the title. He was pointing to a mythical creature on the book, which was a griffin. And literally right off the bat, like a few moments later, it literally says griffin, like clear as day. And I remember when he called everyone over here, and he's like, you guys got to listen to this recording. And when he played it, like I couldn't even believe it. Like, I've never heard an EVP that clear in person. It blew me away.
It sounded like it was a very intelligent haunt.
Oh yeah. And I keep in mind this, the Olympia bookstore, if you look it up, there's like one or two pages about it being haunted. But besides that, you really can't find any information about it. We were trying to like find the history and stuff. And you really can't find anything. The place is well over 100 years. The place actually apparently used to be a funeral parlor. So they say, and I don't know if you watched any of the video, we went inside the basement, which was ginormous. I mean, that place, you could get lost down there. And there's this one room where it looks like a place where they would store, you could say, dead bodies, whether it was a cooler or whatever. Also, there was like this lift, two lifts in there, where it looks like they would, from the top floor, like send stuff down, which essentially could be a casket or a coffin. So
yeah,
it kind of makes sense. Like, not that all this stuff is verified of it being a funeral parlor, but even the owner of the bookstore, like he told us some stories, but even he's not 100% sure about like the whole funeral parlor thing. So it's a lot of like stories that are kept under the table, I guess.
Where was that located?
That was in Dowagiac, Michigan.
Oh, okay,
Olympia,
sure.
Olympia Books is what it's called. And believe it or not, I think they've had, we were either the first group that came in there, or they maybe had like one other group, and we were the first ones to do this in a long time. Like, no one ever asks. And a lot of people think the bookstore's actually closed, because I guess their hours are very weird, but the owners were really friendly. It was like him, his wife, I think his daughter, and they were very friendly. They let us go wherever we want in there. And I believe we were there from like 8 or 9 o'clock till like 2 a.m. or something like that.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
So it was a very interesting place.
Brandon, didn't we have Drew on the show?
Yeah, that was. Well, it'll be 2 episodes ago, because we'll be airing Tanya's episode in
between. He's kind of like that Western. All the Western gear on. I think he was smoking a stogie or something, wasn't he?
Yeah, he does war reenactment
on the podcast, if he was, but
yeah, he was kind of far out. Like, he had his whole persona going on, right? He was such a cool, laid back dude.
Yeah,
that's why I fell in love with him, because he's a super cool guy, and like he puts himself out there, and the way he speaks, it's like, dude, you should have like a TV show. But yeah, he does like Civil War reenactments and stuff like that, and all his history stuff. And that's where I was like, dude, this dude's cool. I got to do some videos with him.
He is cool. He's like one of those guys, like, I don't care what anybody thinks about me. You know, I'm me, and I don't care what you think.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. That's pretty cool. So,
Tommy, you said, you know, you're fairly new to the paranormal field, which everybody has their start. But what actually drew you to it? Were you, did you have an experience before you started, or were you just fascinated by the concept of the unknown?
Yeah, so that's a good question, because I never dealt with any paranormal related stuff growing up. I grew up in a religious home. I do have one story though, and I still can remember this vividly because it was so terrifying. And I don't know if this is paranormal or if this is just something like I imagined because I was so young, but I remember I was really young, and it was late at night. I was sleeping, and I don't even know how old I was. I had to been like, gosh, like 9, 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And I remember just waking up just randomly in the middle of the night and like rolling over, and like right in my face, it looks like what appeared to be, because I can still like picture this, look like a dead corpse, like staring me right face to face, like inches away. And I remember just shooting out of bed, running down stairs to my parents' room, getting my mom, like freaking out, crying, telling her like, there's a man in my room. There's a man in my room. And she's like, Austin, you know, I'm sorry, I've said my real name, but Austin, Tommy, you know, I'm sure everything's fine. She's like, I'll go up there with you. And yeah, sure enough, we went in there, turned the lights on. She checked my closet, like you see in the movies, and nothing was there. So I don't know if that's paranormal related, but I still remember that vividly to this day because it freaked me out so much. But besides that, no, I've never had any paranormal related occurrences growing up. It was just something I've always kind of been interested in. And I've always really dug cemeteries, you know, being a horror movie fan and just like, I don't know, I love antiques and old stuff. So like, I've always dug cemeteries, old cemeteries. So like when I said I was first starting out, I was just trying to check out old cemeteries and not even to find paranormal stuff essentially, but like just to check them out and look at the graves and stuff. I think it's very peaceful. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I mean, to me, talking about seeing somebody, because I grew up seeing spirit, so that's why I'm a spiritualist in that way. That to me would trigger paranormal, because when you came back, there was nothing there.
Right, right.
I mean, you vividly remember being awake. You don't remember waking up. So to me, that's paranormal. It's not like you go, I think I was dreaming. Maybe I wasn't, you know, you go, I don't know if it's paranormal, but I remember being waking up. Oh, so that to me would trigger that first paranormal experience that kind of gets into you.
Yeah. I think, you know, for myself too, I had my first paranormal experience as I think it was like you said, Tommy, like 9 years old, something like that. It was old enough where I can remember everything about it. So I must have been over 5 or 6 years old, because I don't think I probably would have remembered it any lesser than that. But like for myself too, I remember it so vividly. I know exactly where I was, in what room. I even picture the room. I could look out the window and I saw a apparition in a graveyard, which I was sleeping overnight at my grandparents' house. And the front bedroom had this big picture window in the front of it. And you could see clearly, it was crystal clear evening. And their house stood directly across the street from the cemetery. And sure enough, I mean, there was tombstones that were pretty high up, and you could see the apparition right by the tombstone. And it stood there what seemed like forever. And I kept thinking to myself, this isn't real. This isn't real. This can't be. And I kept watching and watching, and it just stood there and nothing, like it seemed like for 5 minutes. And it was like, I kept thinking, this has to be something different than what I think it is. But then it was like, you know, it couldn't be anything different, because it was what it was. So that was kind of my first experience. But then as an investigator, you run into all these other experiences where like you said, it kind of blows your mind. Like, this is so real that it, there's no other explanation for it.
Right. No. Yeah. And I have yet to see an apparition in person with my own eyes. Mm-hmm. But I have captured some stuff, through the videos, where I've caught some almost like, I don't know, and I can't determine whether it's like an orb or dust or possibly an apparition, but I have caught some strange stuff on camera, that's for sure. And then our most recent investigation, which this video should be out soon, I'm wrapping up the editing and everything, but this was the investigation that, like, if you watch my teaser trailer for it, where I literally was scared. Like,
I was about to ask what was your most terrifying?
That one. Yeah, and like I said, this will be my 25th, 26th investigation that I've done in the span of like literally since like those three investigations in 2020, which I don't even really count because I was so new and didn't have gear, but literally since last summer. And out of all these investigations, this is the one that actually scared me. I don't know if you want me to talk about a little bit about it. But,
at least, where was the location that you were at?
Drew's video for this is actually out. We did a Masonic lodge in Paw Paw.
I've done a Masonic lodge. Those things are creepy.
Yeah, this one was very interesting. You know, the thing is, when we went in there, when we first walked in there, I was like, oh, this place looks cool. There's a lot of, me being an antique lover, I was like, I love all the old stuff in here and stuff, but I just don't really see much happening here. And then I guess I was wrong. I'll just to sum it up, at the end of the night, we were there till about 2 a.m. We got a couple good things before that. But there was a basement, so you can already see where this is going. So we went down this, it's a little tiny basement there in the lodge. You go through the kitchen and you go down these kind of like wooden stairs, and this basement, like immediately when I went down there, I got some weird vibes. Everyone was still there. They were doing their own thing, kind of wrapping things up, but I was like, I think everyone else went in the basement, maybe besides Drew, and I was like, we got to go in that basement, I got to check it out. So it was me, one of my cameramen, and one of the new members of our group, Kennedy. So actually, this is something else I'll add that actually happened literally almost at the same time or a little bit before. So we go down in there. And I remember we started the session, but the guys upstairs kept like walking above it. So you could hear the footsteps. So I was like, oh man, I can't record, you're hearing all these like footsteps. And so I remember Kennedy ran up there and was like, hey, we're trying to shoot down here. Can you like not walk around this area so we can actually hear better? So we begin I was like, this is my last final attempt at trying to communicate with you guys here tonight. And so next thing I know, there was this tunnel down there. And apparently I come to find out that Danny from our group from Southern Michigan Paranormals, he was telling us that tunnel, it's like caved in a little bit, but there's like a whole section like on the right upper part of it that like you can see through. But I guess that led to like the other buildings on that same block. So it connects to like the other buildings. But I remember going and standing over there, and I was like, I started getting like really bad vibes at that time. Like I felt like something was watching me. So I'm sitting there like, all right, if there's any spirits that, want to make yourselves known for the last time here, we really want you to, communicate with us or give us some sort of sign. So when I said that, there was some tapping. You can hear it clear as day. It's like a ping. This happened like 3 times. So it was like in introverts of like 3. So that happened, which I was like, what the heck? And then I forgot to mention this. And this is the first time I've ever had this happen to me right in front of me. I know this has happened to Drew, but, Kennedy, and this is only her second investigation with us. I'm sitting there talking and she starts freaking out and she's like, I just got bit. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, literally, like, I felt like something bit me on the leg. So I was like, okay, this is very odd. I'll get back to the biting thing. So that
happened. Did she actually have marks on her?
Yeah, she did. She did. It looks like little teeth mark on her leg. Like two little teeth marks. Like it was red. And she wasn't standing anything like where she could have like cut herself on something. Like you can see it in the video, like she wasn't even up against anything. So I have no idea what the heck that was. But I just knew there was something dark down there. So right after that, maybe not even 5-10 minutes later, that happened. And then I'm sitting there and I really get this feeling like something's behind me. Like I'm facing towards them and the tunnel is behind me and I'm like kind of looking back and forth. And then all of a sudden you'll see me in the video. I just freak out. I move forward and I run into this, like, I don't know what the heck it was, like a bin or something. And I think I scared almost my cameraman and her more than myself, even though I was freaking out. They like were like, oh, you know, swearing and stuff. And I was like, dude, I swear I saw like it would appear to me look like a shadow figure, you know, or like a shadow person. I think you guys know what that is. And I've never witnessed anything like this in my life. And like I said, so that top corner, the right corner, there's like a hole that leads through the tunnel. And it looked like almost like from like the shoulders up, like something peeking through that hole. And I mean, it's, you know, I don't really know how to debunk this just because, and I'm not even going to lie, I haven't really looked at the footage yet. I'm almost to that part in my video. So I'm dying to see what we captured because we have two different angles. Yeah, it looked like a person, like a black shape of a person. Now, I don't really know how to debunk this because it could have been like a shadow that I saw with the lights moving in there of one of, but they weren't moving. So, and I wasn't moving. None of us were moving. So I don't know how it could be a shadow of one of us.
Yeah, exactly.
But I just know what I saw literally scared, like give me chills. Mm-hmm. I remember after that, like I didn't want to be in that basement. Right after that, we got out of the basement and we got Drew. We're like, I told Drew, I was like, dude, you're not going to believe what happened down there. First of all, Kennedy got bit. So yeah, she removed, it was on her thigh. We took a picture of it. You could see it. And then, so Drew came down there with us and he's like, okay, I got to check this basement out. And so he came down there and I think he shot something on his phone, but you could see how scared I was because we went back down there and I literally didn't want to go back down there at all. And sure enough, we were looking at there, and then Kennedy claims to see that she saw that what appears to be the same thing I was describing. And after that, we just all were like, okay, this is not good. Like whatever we were like experiencing or like seeing, like it just didn't feel right. And like I said, I've never been so scared in my life. And like I said, I've been to so many investigations and I've seen so many weird things happening, but I have never like actually physically like been scared that bad. And I remember, I'll also add that when we went down there the second time with Drew, just to show him, like, I had this like weird urge where I felt like I wanted to cry. I don't know if you guys have ever had that on any investigation, but I felt like crying. And I think it might be in Drew's video that in his one clip that he was doing, or I don't know if it was in ours, but you can hear me saying it. Like, I was telling Kenny, I was like, I feel like I'm going to cry. And I don't know why. It just came out of nowhere. It was just very odd. Mm-hmm. The whole situation was so odd.
See, with mine, I did, actually, it was kind of Masonic. It was the Elks Lodge, but they did rituals. They had a ritual room. Uh-huh. So that's why I was going to ask if you got more evidence. It sounds like there's more evidence in the basement because we got more evidence in the ritual room than any place else. And yeah. I mean, those places are off the hook with activity. I mean,
when you say the ritual room, is that like where they hold the meetings? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it's where, like with the Elks, they would hold the meetings. But the weirdest part, I have been in elk lodges before, but this particular one I was in literally had like or north, south, east, west mapped out. They had elements, like it was more like a satanic cult than an Elks Lodge to me. When I was in there, It was creepy. I mean, the fact that there was, I even discovered, and the worst part was every time I went into the room, spirits know about me, my gifts and my abilities. Certain things, they don't like me. Every time I went in that room, they tried to make me physically ill. Mm. They didn't want me in there. And because I was finding things that I'm like, are we sure this is an Elks Lodge? Cause there's like, there's something else going on here because I actually found a pentacle hidden in a corner. I was like, why is there a pentagram? Actually, pentagram upside down. I was like, why is there a pentagram in here? This is not an Elks Lodge, if you ask me. I've never seen that before.
I'm gonna say it would make sense to use something else as like a cover for some other type of activity.
Right.
You know? Oh, we're just the elf lodge.
Well, I mean, even with Masonic, else, you know? I mean, yeah. you being in the building with the Masonic, you know, they have like sacred rituals they won't even tell the public about.
Yeah. Yep.
And there's certain areas that they tell you to be careful of. Don't go or don't go mess around too much. So.
Yeah, Danny from our group, once again, Southern Michigan Paranormals, he's actually a Mason. And what he did, which we did have some activity actually in where they held the meetings. There was some decent activity there. We had another really good EVP. We had something, the music box go off like never before. I've never seen it in my life. And I've been using that thing since last summer. But basically what he did, since, you know, like I said, he's a Mason. So he basically opened up basically like how they open up their meetings, but he didn't finish it because, you know, they can't do that with how they, you know, that's their thing. But he simulated basically opening up the lodge. And that's when we got that EVP and stuff. So I think that definitely kind of stirred up some things definitely through the rest of the night. Now, whether the thing in the basement is related to like the brothers that apparently were there, I don't know, or if it's something else that's way more darker, I don't really know. I couldn't tell you because we went in that almost essentially blindfolded, because it's like they didn't really give us much history about the place. We didn't know who we were really speaking to. We did get a name in the EVP, but besides that, like, we didn't know who was there, like, involved and or anything like that. So it was kind of cool in a sense, because you're just kind of, all right, we'll see what we can get and see what names we can get and just go with that.
Yeah, like, I don't know on the like the history of Pawpaw, but I know, like, a lot of places, you know, like in Michigan, even like in West Michigan, because like a lot of times it's like, you know, like the mobsters in Chicago during Prohibition would come up here and like do stuff up here. Like Capone would be in like West Michigan, like a lot. So that's why I kind of wonder if, because like a lot of the towns and the different ones would have different tunnels under like different places we've been, you know, like investigated and stuff like that, like where the probe, you know, the mobsters would run, you know, stuff underground between different locations and stuff. So that's why I kind of wonder if maybe could have some connection to that possibly.
Oh yeah. We actually did, not too long ago, we did the historic Hotel Nichols, and there was some Prohibition stuff going on there that they were telling us about. There was like a trap door secret. She like pulled up this rug and she's like, yeah, this is where they like smuggled the alcohol and stuff through the Prohibition. And like literally it's like a little trap door. It goes underneath the hotel. That was really interesting. But that's funny you're talking about Al Capone though, because I was looking about doing, I don't know if you guys ever heard of Purgatory. This is a apparent Al Capone hideout. It's like abandoned ruins. It's out in the middle of the woods. If you ever get a chance, look it up. It's just look up Al Capone Purgatory, Michigan. That's not the town. It's what they call this location. But yeah. Apparently some weird stuff goes on there. Not even paranormal related. There is paranormal stuff that happens there apparently, but like some weird cult stuff and like, I don't know, just bad things about this place. But I was trying to go there the end of last summer. I never got around to it, but I do plan on going there this summer. So it's definitely, if you look it up, and it doesn't 100% prove that it's Al Capone's hideout, but there's a lot of thing that points, that's like the theory that it was, because I guess there was a house nearby there where Al Capone had a boxing ring for one of these boxers. If you read like an article about it, it tells about it. But yeah, that was a very interesting location that I've been looking into for a minute now.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, I know with that, like here in Ohio, we have some areas that are mobster run. I mean, do you think the house might have even been a safe haven for him?
Yeah, well, it's like a bunker, like part of it, because it's all kind of ruins. There's one part, it's a bunker that goes kind of like a little bit underground. If you look at some of the pictures, it's actually, I think a guy on YouTube did a video there, just kind of, I don't think he was doing paranormal stuff, he was just during the day just like showing what it looks like. But yeah, it was like just random parts of buildings and stuff, like right randomly in the woods. It's really, really cool. Like, so if you're into like abandoned exploring kind of stuff or exploitation kind of stuff, it's definitely something to check out. And that's like that's the other thing I wanted to do this year, was more like abandoned exploring kind of stuff. even despite the paranormal stuff.
So I thought with a lot of like your, when I, you're older, you're like your original videos, you're starting out like Munchkin Land. And I'm one of those, I personally don't go in cemeteries because I have such a respect for the dead bodies. I actually am terrified. I'm not really terrified, but I don't like to walk on bodies. I'm when I'll walk through a cemetery apologizing if I think I stepped on somebody.
Oh, I do the same thing.
I'm like, I'm so sorry. But I thought it was pretty fascinating with your fascination. Other than finding them peaceful, do you find certain ones are more paranormally active than others in the older section compared to the newer sections?
Yes and no. Obviously, when I go to these cemeteries, I'm like, the first thing I want to check out is the older section. Don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. because I like the older stuff. But I don't think that's necessarily the case. It just really depends on who's trying to communicate with you that night. So you could have Joe Bob in the newer section, being really chatty on the spirit box. And then you could go over here and talk to Suzanne in the old section and she doesn't really get much. It just really, and this is what I tell everyone. It's like, you could go to the same location like 7 days a week, every day. And you're going to get different responses or activity every single night. It's never going to be the same. So it just really kind of the luck of the draw. It's almost like what I call paranormal investigating is essentially just gambling, because mm-hmm. one night you might have some crazy stuff going on. And then the next night, just not really that much. So the way I look at it, yes, I prefer the older stuff. That's because that's just me. But I've had some great responses and some crazy stuff happen with like the newer headstones and stuff like that.
I feel like because you like the older stuff, just kind of like me, you like that history.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I mean, I'm a student of history in that way, because I would prefer spending time in an old house and seeing what that old house would say to me.
Yeah, and that's why I love once again Drew in our group. I've always been in history. I always got good grades in history, and I've always been a big fan. And you know, when I first started out with my videos, you know, I would explain a little bit about more so like the paranormal stories or like the myths and urban legends about like what kind of happened at that location. But it wasn't until I started doing videos with Drew, even before we started the group essentially, where we, you know, I started talking about more so like the history of like when the cemetery was established or who was buried there. And then, once I started joining the group, that's what we've been nailing down. That's our thing is, you know, like we go to these locations and we're talking about, you know, when the place was established, who was involved, who was married to who, when they died in there, when they were born in there, et cetera, because I think it's more interesting going to a location as far as paranormal investigating goes when you actually know what happened. You can get better responses and better results knowing beforehand like what exactly happened and who was there, rather than just going in with not knowing anything. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean. Other people might have different opinions, but honestly, I don't think you can go wrong with that.
See, I'm one of those, I have a philosophy, there's no wrong way to investigate as long as you're willing to explore.
Well, yeah, no, exactly. And like I said, like I started off not doing that kind of stuff, but I find it's a lot more, I get a lot better results knowing when I'm, you know, like let's say you're doing a spirit box session and you're like, you know, like Joe Bob's, you know, buried here and, you know, mm-hmm. like, hey, this is how Joe Bob died, or, you know, he's related to this. Or you can talk like, is Joe Bob here? Is your sister here? You know, I feel like you get better results that way. But you can also, you know, you don't have to know the history about a place to get activity. It's just more interesting to me when you can get like some really cool results and be like, you know, you did your history about the location and then you're getting these responses and you know why, you know, mm-hmm. you can, there's like a connection, I guess.
So I'm sorry, I might have missed it. I lost power there for a second. I was gone for a minute. You're probably like, what happened? But what was I gonna? Oh, do you ever take mediums along with you on your investigations?
I've had a medium. This is something I didn't point out. I do live stream interviews on my YouTube channel. Okay. So I've had some pretty interesting people.
I just finished watching earlier today the Nico one. Oh my lord, that was an amazing interview. While you were interviewing him, I googled the Thailand hell garden he talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I can see how that kind of traumatized him.
Yeah, so I've had some interesting people, Nico Klo being probably one of the most interesting ones I've had. If you don't know who Nico Klo is, this guy is a cannibal, essentially serial killer, right? He's from Paris, France. Jake Weber, the YouTuber, did a 3-part series, video series with him. He went over to Paris and met up with him. That's how I kind of discovered him. I got in contact with him and he was like, yeah, I'd love to join your live stream. So yeah, I interviewed him. This dude, I won't get into a bunch about it, but if you ever check out Nico Klo, also known as the Vampire of Paris, this dude has done some very, very interesting stuff nonetheless. So definitely check him out, or you can watch my interview with him on my channel and it'll explain a lot of things. But yeah, as far as what Kim was saying about the medium stuff, I have had a medium on one of my live stream interviews, Carly the medium. She was awesome. She actually helped out a missing persons case with her ability. She was explaining this to me a little bit, and it was really fascinating. But as far as having a medium on an investigation, we recently got this girl that joined the team that, she apparently has some medium kind of psychic-ish abilities. So
I'm gonna
steal
that term now, psychic-ish.
Sidekickish. I'm not really sure because I've only done 2 investigations with her now, and usually she's real good friends with Randy in our group, so she usually sticks with him. So I haven't really seen too much of what she can do. So yes-ish, kind of,
yeah,
to answer your question. But I have spoken to mediums, and I would love to get Carly to come on investigation. She lives in Wisconsin. We've been talking about having her come to investigation, which I think would be super cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. You said the medium lives in Wisconsin?
Yeah, she does. She's around my age too. She's fairly young, but she's actually one of my friends met her at a convention, like a paranormal horror convention. I think Drew was at the same one, and she was like, here's a bunch of business cards I got. You should interview some of these people. So I looked at, there's a bunch of paranormal teams. And as soon as I saw Carly the medium, I was like, that was the first one I like hit up. Cause I was like, I've always been down to talk to a medium and see what they have to say. So yeah, she was really cool. Really cool. Had a lot of great things to say and interesting stuff that she's done and experienced with her abilities.
Well, now you got one right next to you too. Right next to you on the screen. Tanya has a lot of special gifts.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. I call myself a spiritualist because with mediumship, you actually can start with one thing and develop and become more. So first thing I started out with was seeing and communicating with spirit. I saw spirit ever since I was young. So I don't really like to call myself a medium sometimes. I don't, because of that. Some people have a misconception about mediumship sometimes because they think it's psychic.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And psychics and mediums, they hear the word psychic, or even they hear medium, they compare it to psychic and go, oh, you can tell me my future. Technically, nobody can tell you your future because you can make a decision today that affects you tomorrow. So, but yeah, I can see and communicate with spirit. I keep seeing something moving in that back mirror of yours too. I'm trying not to pay attention to it. Yes.
That's actually funny you say that because I've been on a couple live streams and people have pointed out seeing stuff in that mirror.
There's a shadow that keeps walking by and I'm like, try not to watch, but I can't help it.
Yeah. And that's really funny you say that because I did a live stream about a week ago where I did an overnight Ouija board session live stream.
I watched some of that and I had to walk away from it.
Yeah, so that was a weird night. I had a couple people from our group, you know, basically, essentially what it was the first part of the live stream was like, maybe, I don't know, it was like 2 or 3 hours of us kind of, you know, doing some Ouija board sessions, and we had some of our gear out. So we kind of investigated a little bit. And then the last half was they left. I went in my bedroom, and my place is small, right? So you hear a lot of things like really loud. If there's like a loud noise or any kind of noise, I can hear stuff. So the last part of the night, I just left my cameras rolling. I had my laptop facing the living room behind me, and then I had Kennedy's phone in the kitchen. So I had two different angles, because I've had a lot of weird stuff happen in this kitchen, which is really funny, because 2 times in 1 week, this is really weird because Kennedy was over here both times. We were sitting here, and we were actually just got off a live stream with our group, and we weren't live, but we were chatting. And me and Kennedy were sitting on the couch while we were talking to him. And all of a sudden, you hear this loud bang, and we jump up and we're like, what the hell was that? And I had this like Miller High Life champagne bottle. It was like a limited edition bottle from a few years ago. And this thing just fell off randomly. And this happened like in that same week, like a couple of days prior when Kennedy was here, we heard it fall. And so after that, I was like, all right, we got to do this, you know, we got to do this stream. And I've heard some weird noises. I have one clip actually from that. It was like a 9-hour live stream. So I mean, it's a lot to go through, but it was in the middle of the night. I was watching this as it happened. Me and Randy, actually, you hear this weird noise. I can't even explain it. It sounds like this screeching noise, like almost like an animal. And then like this, like almost kind of like whispering, kind of like,
I thought it was metallic.
Yeah. Did you actually hear that?
Yeah. I thought it sounded very metallic, almost like, I would say it made me think of, like an old metal bed, you know, back in the day, scraping across the floor almost.
Yeah. And there's nothing.
Like a metal frame.
Yeah. I don't ever hear any noises like that ever.
No, I caught it. I was like, when I was watching, I was like, holy what? And I actually went back and re-listened, and I was like, that sounds like somebody scraping those old metal frame beds across the floor.
It was super bizarre. Like, I mean, I remember hearing it and I was like, what the actual hell was that? I was like, that's a first one for me. So yeah, it wasn't too crazy during that live stream investigation. That was the first one I've ever done of that kind of thing. And I think it's still, we got some weird stuff. I remember Randy, we did an Estes method, and some of the stuff he was saying was like spot on what we were asking. Like, it was very bizarre.
Well, I thought when your camera turned orange pretty early. It almost reminded me of when I was at Mansfield Reformatory here for my first ever investigation. That was when digital cameras were first becoming such a big thing. And at Mansfield in March, it always comes back in March, they will get digital pictures that'll turn red. And I mean, there is no way to turn a digital camera red.
Right.
That's what it reminded me of. And I had a thought process about that, because Mansfield being an old facility, I had a feeling that because of how cold it was, they were very upset. They were very angry. They were making their presence known in the red. So now this is only what I took from it when I was watching it. When the blonde girl, I don't know her name, I'm sorry.
Heather.
Yeah. When she started trying to call a family member while you were in the middle of the session, I think pissed something off.
Okay. Yeah, I would have to go back and rewatch.
Yeah, because I remember watching it because I was watching the feeds and everything and telling people, like, be careful, be careful. And I remember right after, almost, she goes, she's trying to ask for somebody's father or her father-in-law or something like that. She's trying to ask somebody to come through while she was in the middle of the current session. And I was like, and that's when the one name we will not mention came through.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, oh, I think she pissed something off. And then it wasn't long after that the camera turned orange.
And I've done so many live streams and stuff now. And I've never had that happen. Not once, where like the background changes like the color like that to like a bright red. That's never happened. So I was like, what the heck is going on?
And it wasn't,
and I wasn't the first one to notice it. People were watching, they're like, dude, your background is like getting really bright and like red. I was like, what?
It was almost like somebody put like an orange film like this over it, and it just covered everything, and it looked like an orangish yellow red. It was really weird.
Yeah, I couldn't explain that one. That was the first one for me, and I was like, don't look at me. I wasn't touching it or nothing. I don't even know what the heck was going on. So yeah, that was definitely very bizarre. But yeah,
I did want to backtrack a little bit to so it was like the most recent case where you felt like almost like the sensation of crying.
Yeah,
because that's, I think you're probably starting to develop some empathic abilities. Because for me, like when I started investigating, I was doing it purely from the scientific. Like I didn't feel things, I didn't, you know, but as more of I've done it, the more things have opened up for me. So I think that could be starting to happen for you too, where you might be starting to develop some abilities from like now that you're like receptive to it and open to investigating it, that it might, you know, between the two realms, you might be being able to better connect with it on that level.
That could be a good thing and that could be a bad thing.
Yeah. That's what I'm just giving you a heads up on it, because that's what I've experienced, you know, as an investigator.
No, and that definitely makes sense, because, you know, like I said, on the past investigations, you know, I felt like a little bit weird, like, you know, there's something weird going on here, but I've never felt that strong of like a like connection with like whatever that was. So it had to have been something either like what you were saying, or just a strong presence that literally made themselves known, even through like physical, like my, like in my head and everything. Cause I felt like just like, I wanted to just cry. And, I'll be honest, like, I never cry in person, really, like hardly ever. So for that to do that was very bizarre. And that's what was, I think, weirded me out too, was like, I never like want to cry. So like, what is going on here, kind of thing, you know?
You've experienced that, haven't you, Brandon? Like from where you started to where you are now, you feel
more things. It's like, it's totally different, like doing investigations for me from like now as opposed to when I first started. Mm-hmm. When I first started, I was like taps, you know, you're going in there trying to do everything, you know, under a scientific method. Didn't really have any, like, I mean, I had experiences when I was a kid and stuff like that. I'd see things from time to time, or like, you know, but the more I got into it, I was able to start seeing apparitions. I've actually was able to hear EVPs as they happen. Like we'd be sitting like with six people all sitting by each other. I would hear it. Nobody else would hear it. Like, you guys didn't hear that? Then you play the recorders back and it's on the recorder, but nobody else would hear it and stuff like that too.
Yeah. That's interesting, because I've had that too, where I've listened to EVPs and like most people couldn't hear it, and then I'm like, oh, I heard that. Or like even through the spirit box, I know that some of those are touchy depending on which one you use, whether it's like an SP7 or something like that. But a lot of the time it's like I'll like hear a word and I'll be like, yeah, I heard that, and everyone else is like, what are you talking about, I never heard that. And I'll be like, I'll go in post-production, I'm like, yeah, I knew I heard that word. Like, I don't know, I can just like hear stuff better than other people in those situations sometimes. It's really weird.
See, it's funny. I'm usually the one that I can't hear them through the boxes, usually. And if I hear it through the box, that's usually, I have my team, the team around me, were like, yeah, we heard that too. Because since I'm so sensitive to the other side, I don't need it. And that's why I'll tell people all the time, it's like, I didn't catch that. And then they'll play it back for me later and I'll hear it then.
Mm-hmm.
But it usually takes that later. Because when I'm in the environment, I'm trying to do what I'm supposed to be doing. But I've been called many colorful names through those boxes.
Oh, yes. Yeah, for sure. That's funny, Tommy, that when I got back on, that you mentioned Danny from SMP. That's kind of where I started out in that group, that same group.
Yeah, they've been around for quite some time.
Yeah. So I kind of started out there, God, I don't know, maybe 5 years, 5-6 years ago. I started it when I first started investigating. I was with Danny in that group.
Did you know Shane Feek as well?
Uh-uh.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe he's more newer. I don't. I've done one investigation with him. He's a very smart guy. And then I had him and Danny on for a live stream. But I was curious if you knew Shane.
No, I don't think so.
But yeah, I guess he's had. Gosh, Danny said he's had like, I forget how many people used to be in the group, and he's like, I don't yeah. know why I had that many people in the group, because he's like, it was a little too much to handle sometimes.
Yeah. So how many people are in the group now?
basically just him and Shane, as far as when they do investigations, because a lot of okay. the other people, they're still in there, but I guess a lot of them are just busy or whatever, but sure. generally it's just him and Shane that usually go on and do stuff, as far as I know.
Okay, well, that's interesting.
But I mean, Danny does stuff with our group too. Mm-hmm. More so like he'll do his SMP stuff. Yep. And then he'll go on investigations with us, kind of like observe, and he'll do some he'll do a little bit investigating himself, but he's kind of like more of a mentor and helps us get into locations because he's been doing it for so long. But Danny's a great guy, real great guy.
Yeah, we've had a lot of fun investigations together.
Listening, I mean, it seems like you guys up in Michigan have more of that paranormal community where you will go and help each other out if you need to. Where here in Ohio, I hate to say it, but it seems like most of the teams are for themselves. Me and our team and another team are kind of branching out and trying to build that community that will work together and help each other out. But I kind of want that. I'm kind of jealous. I'm not gonna lie.
You're very right. I know a lot of great YouTubers as far as like paranormal stuff and all that. Mm-hmm. So many great people. We have so many great Facebook pages where, like, you know, everyone come in there and share their videos, and everyone supports each other and subscribes. And yeah, like I there's so many great paranormal investigators and YouTubers here in Michigan. I've met so many friends and some just great people. Like mm-hmm. I was telling Brandon, Ben, you had on here, I guess once or maybe a couple times mm-hmm. from Afterlife yeah. Road.
Ben Goldman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's a great guy. Me and him recently became really good friends. I've always watched his videos, but I had him on for a live stream recently and I was on his, and yeah, they do nothing but great stuff. So as far as Michigan paranormal investigators, you know, we stick together and there's a lot of great teams out there.
When Ben starts talking, it's like, I am all ears. He's got the best stories. I kid you not.
Oh, yeah.
It really is great to hear that, though. Yeah. It really is great to hear that. Like I said, it's sad here in Ohio because we have a lot of paranormal teams. And mm-hmm. we meet at ParapsyCon usually every year at Mansfield Reformatory. And we'll mingle. That's where it seems to end.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, sometimes you guys, like, so your case, some people can't show up, reach out to another team. Hey, we've got this investigation. Can you help us out? It seems like you guys have that figured out, and I'll give you guys that credit.
Yeah. Hey, Brandon, whatever happened to that Para Unity?
Grasp is still doing that. Okay. We have LST three or not the LST. We did one event at the LST 393, which is mm-hmm. a World War II transport ship, like a couple years ago. And they have like the SS City of Milwaukee, which is was an old cargo ship. We've had like we get together, get a bunch of teams together, and then kind of mm-hmm. like investigate at the end of the day. That's like a huge blast, because that's one of the things that they wanted. Grasp wants to do is to basically Tanya was talking about, is to have it where all these different groups can all network, where we can share team members and we can operate in that type of a manner.
Yeah. So Grasp is, when Brandon says that, they're a paranormal team out of Grand Haven, Michigan. They've been around forever. I couldn't tell you what it stands for. Do you know, Brandon, off the top of your head?
I can't remember it exactly. So I might, it's like gathering research and something, a paranormal phenomenon, something along that. But I can't remember what exactly each letter. It's close to that, but I don't remember what each letter is. But
I've never heard of them. I'll have to check them out.
Yeah, they're a really cool team. I've done quite a few. done a few investigations with kind of members of their team and like done Bigfoot investigations up in the UP with them and stuff like that.
Yep. It's G-R-A. G-R-A.
S-P-P.
S-P-P. Yeah.
So I saw on the latest interview you did, Tommy, you were advertising for a Ghost-O-Rama or Ghost-Rama.
Yeah.
Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so I'm really excited about this. Actually, once again, I'll bring up Danny again from Southern Michigan Paranormals. Danny organized this event with one other guy. I'm not sure the guy's name. So basically what this is, which Brandon, you're invited to this. So, and anyone here in Michigan, or even anyone that wants to travel. So everyone's invited. It's more likely probably people in Michigan that live closer, but anyone can come to this. But it is essentially a paranormal meet and greet. It's a convention. So, you know, we're going to have all these paranormal YouTubers or just paranormal teams. You can have set up your own booth. I'm pretty sure, quote me if I'm wrong. I mean, well, I can link you guys the Facebook page for it and the event for it. But I think if you're a paranormal group, you can get in for free, or if not, it's like $35 to set up your own booth. You can sell your merch. You can go, you know, gather around, meet and greet other investigators and stuff. They're going to have, what is it? You know, like a car show. So I think it's like old cars. They're going to have like Ghostbuster vehicles. I think the Ghostbusters Coalition is going to be there. They're going to have like oddity stuff, horror memorabilia. They got food trucks. I think they got Danny actually showed me, they got a really cool like punk horror punk band coming all the way from Louisiana to play at this. I'm pretty sure it's free to get in. And this is actually at the Van Buren County Poorhouse Museum, which is a haunted location. So throughout the day, you can go inside this museum for $5, take a tour. And then I think this event is from, gosh, what is it? 1 to 7 p.m., I want to say. And then from 7, or and then there's like a 2-hour break at the end of the night. And then from 9 to 11, there's a ghost tour. And I believe it's $20 to do a flashlight ghost tour. So yeah, it's a super cool event. I'm really excited. I invited a lot of people to this. I know our group is going to be there. Midwest Parahistoric Society. We'll have our own booth. So if you want to come, you know, say hello to us, we'll be there. So anyone's invited to this. If you love anything paranormal or you should definitely come check this event out. It's definitely going to be a lot of fun.
What was the date on that?
It's August 20th, this year.
I won't be around.
Yeah, I would definitely like to make it. So we definitely want to do some like, you know, podcasts on the road kind of a thing, like on location kind of a thing.
Oh yeah, we welcome. I think I invited actually two podcast groups that I watch or listen to on there. So we have podcast people coming to this as well. So
okay,
definitely come out. We'd love to see you. I think it'd be a lot. Yeah. Like I said, it should be a lot of fun.
See if I can get back-to-back Saturdays off, because imagine at my work sometimes I got the next
week. Is it on a Saturday?
I believe so. I have to double check it, because I know the next week's Michigan Paracon, so I know I already got that one taken off. So yeah, so sometimes back-to-back
Saturdays. I wanted to go to that. Is that next weekend?
It's the weekend. It'd be the last weekend in August is Michigan Paracon.
So I thought you were saying it's next week, and I was like, I didn't know it was that soon.
No, I was talking about the weekend after that event, so trying to get two Saturdays off might be a little bit of a challenge for me, but I'm definitely going to try to see if I can do it.
See, my team that I actually am an investigator on is out of Toledo. I drive like 2 hours to be with them and investigate, because, like I said, it's not very much of community, but I've known the lead investigator for like over 20 years, so we've been friends forever, and I'll have to let him know, because we like to take field trips and see what other places have, and trying to branch out our team to kind of have more of that community feel. Maybe try to get it interstate.
I think it'd definitely be worth it. I mean, you would meet a lot of cool people and, you know, exchange business cards and, you know, YouTube channels or whatever. You know, it's a good way to get yourself, you know, your team out there. And, like, you know, like, this is who we are, you know, explain yourself. And just make some new friends, really.
Well, I know with us, we like to talk to other teams to get, because certain teams like to investigate differently and they like, they do different things. And start, we've interacted with teams that if they have something negative, they don't want to deal with it. We actually will take care of it. We'll get rid of it if we can. You know, it's, so it's like, we'd like to learn from other people because you guys might have a technique that we never even thought of. Or vice versa.
Oh, no, for sure. And I that's why I love watching so many paranormal groups on YouTube and different people, because every parent, like you said, every paranormal team does their kind of their own thing. And it's like, I've never seen that before. Like, I learned a technique that I've been still trying to do. I don't know if you guys ever heard of it. It's called, like, I think it's the Three Kings. Have you ever heard of that? I believe it's called Three Kings. Maybe I'm saying it wrong, but basically what it is, I'll just explain it, is someone is between two mirrors. So we have the person in the middle and there's a mirror on the right side and a mirror on the left side, and they're doing an Estes method. And apparently, because, you know, if you have two mirrors parallel with each other, it's essentially right. supposed to be like a portal that shoots across. Yep. So this is, I don't know, I've seen some teams do this method and it seems to be crazy. So that was one that I just thought of the top of my head that I've been dying to do.
I've heard of that. But I've heard of it with windows.
Windows, really?
Windows across each other, because the spirit can see through it, so they'll walk through it, so they can walk through your house. If that's why they would, the old wives' tale is, if you have windows across each other, always keep one of the windows, the blinds closed.
That makes sense too, though, because it's essentially still like a reflection, just like a mirror. So I guess that could make sense. I've just never heard of that. Usually, it's just with mirrors, but. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I did an investigation where the person literally, and the negative stuff that was trapped in the house was just absolutely crazy. And it was an interesting investigation. Have you ever heard your own voice come through the boxes?
No, but no. I have heard there's two times I've heard some weird stuff. Like, I was at this one little cemetery right by my house, and I heard, it was a little kid, there was like almost like a family plot. It was all the kids that died were buried here. Mm-hmm. And one of the kids' name was Johnny, and it literally sounded like a little kid, that like all the other voices were normal, and it was like, Johnny, and I was like, what? That was really odd. And then recently at that Hotel Nichols investigation, this one weirded me out, because both of my cameramen looked up and were like, was that really just his voice? Here I go bringing up Danny again. It went, hey-o, and it was identically Danny's voice. Like, I thought, I was like, Danny, are you on like the radio or something? But I went up down there and told him, and I was like, he was like, what? And yeah, like literally, I knew for a fact it was Danny's voice. But I've never had it where it was my voice, but I've had it where it was someone else's, like, where yeah. I was like, yeah, this is clearly.
Give it time. Give it time.
I think if I hear my voice, I will probably be severely weirded out. That'll definitely weird me out.
I will tell you, it is an experience when you hear it for the first time. I actually literally just heard it for the first time for my own voice on an investigation a few weeks ago. And I'm like, I've never heard my voice come through these things, but when we were there, all of the members of the team's voice came through.
That's weird.
Wow.
Well, we're actually getting close, aren't we, Brandon?
Yeah, we should be wrapping up.
We've got kind of a time frame.
If anybody's got like kind of a last thing to say. I did want to add though that for the Van Buren the poorhouse or whatever, that one, Darren from Lakeshore Paranormal, if anybody's interested in possibly going to the vet and kind of want to see some of the paranormal activity, I know he's done investigations there and he's got videos out from that location.
Yeah, didn't he do one with a lot of activity out of there? Michigander Man, I believe.
Yeah, I know he went there before, I believe, with Michigander Man. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I think I watched that one because I was like, dude, we're actually, and that's when I invited, I was like, dude, you did a video here. We're having an event here. So
yeah,
that's really cool.
Yeah.
I myself have never been there. I know our group is looking at doing one. Before that event, actually having an investigation there beforehand. So
yeah, that's one of those spots I'm trying to, hopefully me and Darren and Michigander Man, we're talking about maybe trying to get in there again sometime. So maybe we can all work something out, maybe.
Yeah, that'd be super dope. I'd be down.
So Tommy, can you share with everyone one more time where they can find you, your videos, that sort of thing?
Yeah. So like I said, you can find me, you know, definitely on YouTube, Tommy Amongst with the ST, not among amongst.
Okay.
The tombstone. That's where I kept getting tripped up. Cause when I was looking other, for it, I kept putting among, I'm like, I'm not
amongst people.
That's close to it. It'd bring me some other channel.
Yeah. No, you're not the other ones that don't feel so bad. Yeah, Tommy Amongst the Tombstones on YouTube. You can also find me on Facebook, same thing, Tommy Amongst the Tombstones. Okay. You can also find me on Instagram, Tommy underscore Tombstone. I'm very active on Instagram, and I just recently made my Facebook page, and I'm pretty active on there too. So I try to, you know, keep up with everyone with the live streams we got going on, the videos, and what the group's doing. And then, yeah, I do have a TikTok, but I'm not a huge TikTok fan, so I haven't posted on there a while. But if you want to follow me on TikTok, I believe it's Tommy.Tombstone. And that's basically my social media stuff, how to get in hold of me or contact with me or watch my content.
Okay, that's perfect. And for us, we're pretty much on Facebook under Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast. So that's where you can find our videos.
Yeah, and you can find it too on Jose Paranormal History Productions, spelled H-O-E-Z-E-E. That's my YouTube page, but that has all the, that's the YouTube home of the Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters podcast.
Yep.
And I actually noticed the other day by Googling us, we are on iHeartRadio.
Yeah, we're on a bunch of the different Apple podcasts, and I know like to the site Audacity, like that shares it out to a bunch of different podcast sites as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, good. Thank you, Tommy, for joining us. It was really great having you. A lot of good stories, and hopefully we can see you again in the future.
Oh, yeah. I really appreciate you guys having me on. And yeah, you haven't seen the last of me. We got some great investigations coming up here soon. So
good. We'll hopefully get you back on maybe this summer. Right, Brandon?
Yeah, that'd be good.
That'd be good. Maybe this summer.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how many people you usually have on here, but it'd be cool to have a couple more people from our group all come on here. And
yeah, that'd be cool.
About investigation. Totally. So.
Yeah, with the speaker mode, it works out good. So we can have more people on. So if you ever want to get, we can have more people from your group and get Drew on. Unfortunately, he had something come up, so he wasn't able to join us tonight. But
Well, thank you again. Goodbye, everybody. Good show. Bye.
Take it easy.
Yeah.
Family-owned Palermo Pizza underwrites this episode of Grand Rapids Ghost Hunters Paranormal Podcast, located at 901 Nissan Parkway, Southwest Wyoming, and available at 616-531-8300.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the producer and not necessarily those of WKTV Community Media.